Please welcome David. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay? Okay, great. Hi, I'm David. I'm a compulsive overeater. So grateful to be here. Thank you, Region 3, for welcoming me with such love and acceptance. I'm just so honored to be here. And I'm just going to jump right into it. I'm coming up on 11 years of abstinence, and my abstinence is no binging, no purging, no flour, no sugar. And I came into OA 13 years ago. I was 21 years old. I was failing out of college. I hadn't spoken to my dad in over a decade. I was still a virgin. I was 60 pounds overweight. I had negative money in my bank account. I hated my sister and my mom. I had sexual trauma that I didn't even know that I had. I couldn't stop binging. I couldn't stop purging. I couldn't stop counting calories. And, you know, every area of my life was at a bottom. And I thought that that was, you know, why live? Why live if there's nothing to live for? And, you know, I was just pulling up some quotes before the meeting. And, you know, one of the quotes from the AA literature, step four, it says, we kind of have to learn that all the faulty foundation of our lives will have to be torn out and built anew on bedrock. And for me, because everything was already a mess, I think it became easier for me to do. And I look at my life today, and everything has been touched by this program. My life is so higher powerful, because I built from nothing. Like I came in here with nothing. This was the last house on my block, on the block. I was ready to commit suicide. I was 21 and like this was, I had nothing. And you know, I have a physical allergy and a mental obsession. I don't know what came first, the chicken or the egg, but I do believe that I was born a compulsive overeater. It's in, you know, it's a shake my family tree. We all have this thing. And we also have a lot of mental illness. And, you know, I heard in a meeting a couple of months ago that the issue is in our tissues. And for me, I really can resonate with that. Because so much of my compulsive overeating was eating over something that I didn't even know that was going on with me. And I grew up on Long Island in New York in a very perfect, idyllic, you know, movie type of neighborhood. On the water, we had a house on the water. My dad was a doctor. My mom's an early childhood trauma psychologist. Everything on the outside looked great and dandy. I went to summer camp. I went to private school. Nobody knew that my family had any secrets or anything wrong with us. But on the inside, it was filled with alcoholism, rage, abuse. I just found out in the last year that my mom's bipolar, schizophrenic, like, my family, it was not nice. And I was just thinking, so many people here have heard my story, may have heard my story. I've spoken a lot of meetings and conventions, and what it was like has not changed, but the person telling it has. And I have a lot of more compassion and love for the people who birthed me. And so I don't want to just throw them under the bus, but it was a war zone growing up, and I always share the first memory I have of childhood. My dad was this big, heavy set, angry guy, and he came home from work one day, and the dog like ate one of his doctor statues, and he was raging through the house. And I have an older sister, and my dad found my older sister, and he was like throwing her up against the wall, grabbing her by her chins, calling her a fat effing pig. And I was always like ACA to the rescue, jumped on my dad's back, trying to be the referee. And I remember he grabbed me by the shirt and just like curled me against the wall. And I looked across the hallway and my mom was standing in the doorway and I was just screaming and begging for her to help. And she went into her room and closed the door. And that was a resentment that I had for over 20 years. Like, how could my mom not protect me? Until really recently when I had a spiritual awakening around our relationship. But that's what it was like. It was every man for himself. I ended up testifying against my dad when I was 7. Court took away custody. And then like any good alcoholic or addict or overeater, It was off with your head. I'm never going to talk to you again. And I'm never even going to deal with anything that happened to me. But I would go to school and they called me mute boy in school. I would walk around with my head down. I couldn't raise my hand in the classroom. I couldn't look people in the eye. I mean, when I tell you the fact that I'm speaking on this meeting, it's a true effing miracle. Like, it's a miracle that I can speak and look at people in the eye, let alone like have the confidence to share my story with strangers. But even into college, if I had to give an oral presentation, I would just drop the class. Like, I was so terrified of judgment and father figures and what people thought of me. Like, I just froze all the time, and I ate over it. And I used to eat over it and eat over it. And as a young kid, food was all I had. My mom was completely checked out. She became a single mother. My dad didn't have custody. I was always scared that he was going to come and take me and my sister. And the food was there. The food was my mom. It was my dad. It was my security. It was my consistency. It didn't change reality on me. It didn't tell me I was crazy. Like, the food was there. And another quote that I pulled, I think it's in step one. I'm going to change the drinker to the eater. Once the eater has crossed a certain invisible line, he loses the power to choose. And that's what makes him a compulsive overeater. And for me, that happened really quick and really young. Like, by the time I was 10 years old, I was 60 pounds overweight. I was the fat kid in school. I got picked on. I got bullied. And I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop eating. Like, I know what it's like to be an alcoholic with food. And I had been that since I was probably 10. I had crossed an invisible line because I coaxed and I used food so much as my comfort that I crossed the line and I just couldn't stop. And, you know, every day coming home, eating ice cream, and then I would get picked on at school, and then I would eat over it. I would eat over the shame that people were making fun of me. I would eat over the pain that I didn't have a mom or a dad that I thought I needed or deserved or wanted. And that's what it was like, you know, in those early, early childhood years. And then I ended up being raised by another family, which added a whole new level of I don't belong here to my story. But what happened was I found bulimia when I was about 15 years old. I was 60 pounds overweight, and I found diet pills. And, you know, they say it's a progressive illness. You know, I love the idea of the pendulum. It just swings to here and to here. You know, 60 pounds overweight, can't stop eating with food. Pendulum swings. I'm, you know, taking 15 pills of diet, you know, hydroxycut every single day in high school. I'm passing out at sports practice. All of a sudden, I'm a three-sport athlete. Like, I swing from the trees of dysfunction. Like, I'm not ever in the gray. It's so black or white for me. I started getting recruited to play sports, and nobody knew, like, in my head, I'm still Fat David. I'm Baby Beluga, who used to get picked on. And I knew if I started to gain weight again, the attention that I started getting from girls, I would never get it again. So I went to any lengths to just keep it off and keep it off. And whenever I would get in a relationship with a person, I would end up breaking up with them because, you know, it says in the literature, I have the total inability to form a true partnership with another human being because I didn't have a partnership with myself, because I didn't have a partnership with my family, with my parents. We didn't have a table where you come home and you have a dinner and you pass around the talking stick and say, how was your day today, David? Like, I was so far from the human race when I came into this program. Like, I didn't know. I would see people at Starbucks having a chat. I was like, how do they do that? Like, that's so far from what I grew up in. But I found these diet pills and I found bulimia. And, you know, through high school, through college, I ended up going to 5 colleges in 4 years, like, total inability to just put down roots. Like, I'm just so used to just picking up and running because that's what we did. The issues in my tissues, that's what I did when I was 7 when we were running from my dad. So I would leave cities. I would go to a new college. My friends never knew where I was. My phone was always off. But for me, the one thing that remained the same was my eating disorder. And I just couldn't, whenever I would binge, I would then purge. And whenever I would go to the store, I would then have to find a place where I could eat in silence. And then once I added on the bulimia, it was, you know, I was living in Manhattan. Where's the next bathroom where I can throw up in peace? How can I get down to my 24-hour gym? You know, when I ended up hitting my bottom, I was calorie counting on my, I was going from every single Whole Foods in New York City, counting on my phone how many thousands of calories. And then I would go down to the gym and I wouldn't leave the gym until it matched the calories that I binged that day. And to make a long story short, I all my cards were cashed and I just said, this is it. I'm gonna kill myself. Like, there's nothing to live for. And I went down to my mom's house on Long Island. It was around November, December, and nobody was home. And I said, I'm gonna have one final binge before I kill myself. And I had tried a few times over the years, but like, this was going to be the end. And I'm binging my way through my mom's kitchen. I'm sure we all know what it's like to be a mad scientist, where I'm like putting things in the microwave. There's things on the oven that shouldn't be there. I'm pouring sugar onto stuff. And I tore through the kitchen and then I went to her pantry and I'm like, all the leftover Halloween candy. I'm binging. I'm standing up while binging. Like a raccoon, and then the OA 12 and 12 falls out onto the ground while I'm binging. And, you know, my mom, the only thing that I could put together why that was there is because she's a psychologist and she, I guess, had those books. But the miracle, the first miracle of my life is not that that book fell out. The miracle is that something gave me the power to pick it up. And I went into my room and I opened the OA 12 and 12 and I had no idea about 12 step programs. I had no idea about, eating disorders. Like, I honestly thought that I was an alien that had been punished and I was the only person on earth who had this weird food secret. And I opened the OA 12 and 12 and it said something like, we of Overeaters Anonymous have found in this fellowship a way to recover from the disease of compulsive overeating. And that sentence changed my life. Like, it gave, it was like light bulb. Cause I didn't know there was a program. I didn't know this was a disease. I didn't know there was hope. I thought I was going to the grave with this thing. And I ended up going back to New York City. And another miracle is that I went to my sister's apartment and I said, Michelle, I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a bulimic. I'm going to kill myself and I don't know what to do. And she said, you need to go to OA. And she printed out a New York City meeting list. And the next day I went to my first meeting on the Upper West Side. And I heard in that meeting, keep coming back. Don't leave before the miracle happens. And I've kept coming back. And even before I got abstinent, it took me 2 years to get abstinent. I went to a meeting almost every single day and I started to change. And things started to change in my life. And I ended up getting through college. By a miracle, I ended up getting into this graduate school program. And I moved across the country from New York to LA without knowing anybody, with having no money in my bank account. And I started going to OA LA recovery. And I used to hear, find a sponsor who has what you want and ask them how he or she is achieving it. And I'm 21 years old. Like, what do I want? I want to get married and I want to live happily ever after. Like, I had no conception of what I wanted or what I needed. But I had my list. I had my checklist. You know, he needed to be in the entertainment industry and drive a nice car, like all superficial, nothing that mattered. And I would go around looking for the person and nobody was available. And it kept making me more and more demoralized. And one day, right before Thanksgiving, 11 years ago, I shared in a meeting that nobody wants to sponsor me. Like, I was the victim of every relationship. Nobody wants to sponsor me. Poor me. And this woman came up to me at the end of the meeting and she said, David, I'll temporarily sponsor you. And I looked her up and down and she was everything that I didn't want. I don't think she was in a relationship. I don't think she had a car. I don't think she had a job. I'll go as far as to say, I don't even know if she was in OA. Like, she was so not what the doctor ordered, but something again, and I say something and I know something today means God, But I didn't have a God then. I just had a something. Something said, okay, let's try this. And we started working the 12 steps. And very, very early, around while I was on step one, there was a food like workshop that I went to in LA. And in that workshop, they said, write down what your alcoholic foods are. And it clicked for me that I'm an alcoholic with food. And when I eat sugar or flour, I turn into an alcoholic and I can't stop. And for some reason, that was a shift for me. And it was like, what does the big book say? Abstinence is the only thing, you know, it's, there's no middle ground. Like, I have to be 100% abstinent with my food, because it's alcohol to me. And if I eat one, thing of sugar, my day is ruined. My month is ruined. I don't know if my life is ruined. Like, that's how bad it is for me. So I became sober with food, and I realized, or I, with the help of a sponsor, I came to understand what my red light, green light, yellow light foods were. And then I started working the steps. And really, I'll be honest, the first time I went through the steps, it was mostly about the food. We got to my fourth step, we got to my ninth step. I touched on my dad and my mom stuff a little, and my sponsor was like, just keep on going. Like, you'll have plenty of times to go through the steps again. I remember I had this like weird, messy food night one day when I was on my ninth step, and my sponsor said, David, you're the type of person that if you get off this train, you're never coming back. Just stay on. And that's the beauty of the help of a sponsor, is like the sponsor knows me so well that they know how to guide me through the steps in this program. My sponsor, I have a sponsor today who's known me since I had $6 in my bank account and like had nothing in my life. And and now they get to see my life. That was so helpful early on. And by the time I got through the 12 steps the first time, I had felt that I had come to sanity with food. Like I had been, and I don't even know what restoration, being restored to sanity was, because I never remember having, they say in the AA literature, soundness of mind. I don't remember ever having that, but I started to have something that I'd never had before, which was peace with the food, with my thinking, a little bit in my life. And then I started sponsoring, and then I started sharing more at meetings, and then I started traveling to be of service, and my life slowly started to become a life of service. And, you know, it says in the AA 12 and 12, the 12th step is about the joy of living. And the more that I gave, the more my life got filled up. And, you know, I sponsor people all around the country, all around the world, really. And it's the best part of my life, is showing up, forgetting my first world problems, and just being there for somebody and walking them through their first abstinent night, or showing up at the bris of their child, or being at their wedding. Like, I get to walk people through life just like my sponsors walk me through life. And the more that I went through the steps, you know, I think I've been through the steps 7 times in the last 11 years. It's become about people, and it's become about relationships. And that idea, I have the total inability to form true partnerships. It's with everybody. It's with myself. I didn't know how to sit still. I didn't know how to freaking meditate. It's with people on the 405, which is the highway in LA. Get out of my way. Don't you know who I am? It's with my dad. Like, I'm never going to talk to him again. It's with relationships. If I can just find the one, then I'm going to be happy. Like, I have a disease of perception, and my mind just skews everything. So as I've gone through the steps again and again, I get to shine a light on my disordered thinking, not my disordered eating, because hopefully by the time I'm through the steps the first time, it's not about the food anymore. Now it's about my thinking. You know, I have a physical allergy and a mental obsession. Thanks to abstinence, I get to cure one day at a time the physical allergy. I don't eat no matter what. The mental obsession, it's one day at a time. It's, you know, if my wife says whatever, like, I can get triggered and I don't even know it. It's one day at a time that I have to treat my thinking. And it's, you know, it says that all over the literature. This disease is centered in my mind, not in my body. Like, really, I have a disease of my mind, and I have to work the 12 steps to change my perception. So around the third time I went through the steps, I had a different sponsor who started to say, David, you're angry a lot. You might want to shine a light on your daddy issues. And I was like, what the, who are you to tell me? Don't tell me to do that unless you had the childhood that I had. Like that was the chip on my shoulder. And my sponsor used to say, you don't have to ever talk to your dad again, but you're drinking that poison expecting somebody else to get hurt. Like that's what this resentment holding is all about. And eventually, like it says in the AA big book and the AA 12 and 12, if you stay with your resentments, you're gonna use again. So I went through the steps of looking at the relationship with my dad, and I got to see in the pattern in step four, you know, and step five, that when somebody hurts me, not just my dad, because I got to look at all of my relationships, but when somebody hurts me, I don't have the asset in my character to forgive. I don't know how to say that really hurt me, but I'm going to let you back in my life. It's easier for me to just say off. I never want to talk to you again. I'm blocking your number. Like I'm going to move on. You know, I'm not going to forgive and I'm not going to forget, but I'm not going to have to deal with it. And I got to look at that and I got to heal that and change that. And for me, and I'm very careful to say this because I've spoken on meetings where I share my story with my dad and people get in the chat and they're like, nowhere does the big book say you have to do this. I'll say for me, when I got to step four and five and I saw the pattern that I don't know how to forgive, and then I got to step eight where I had to pray for the willingness. I started doing it every day. I would pray for the willingness to forgive my dad. I'm on step eight. It wasn't about forgiving my dad. It was praying for the willingness to forgive my dad. And I did it every day for months and months. And one day I found myself meaning it, like praying for my dad and actually meaning it. And then one day I found myself on a plane back to New York. And you know, over the years, my dad has sent me emails and letters and, you know, he's changed. And what am I going to do? Not let anybody ever back into my life. You know, I demand perfection in all of my relationships. Like eventually I got on a plane and I met with my dad face to face. And he said, David, I'm so sorry. How can I make it up to you? And we started to have a relationship. And a couple years later, I flew back to New York again. And I spent a weekend with my dad. And on the second to last day, he said, David, do you want to go to one of those OA classes? I see all your literature every morning. And I said, okay. And I took my dad to a meeting. And at the end of the meeting, we were in Westchester, New York. The secretary said, do any newcomers want to raise their hand? And my dad had tears in his eyes and he said, my name's Lou and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I've been in denial my whole life. And it's like, when I see that people aren't doing it to me, they're just in pain themselves, I get to forgive. And that's what this program has done for me. Oh man. So I have a relationship with my dad today, and I want to say, you know, I came into this program, I was still a virgin. I thought I was never going to be intimate with another person because I couldn't even take my shirt off. You know, when I went on a 12-step trip to Israel in my first year, and everybody went in the Dead Sea, and I was too ashamed to get in the water because I didn't want people to see my, you know, stretch marks. So that's where I came from, and I've done a lot of healing and work with sponsors and jumping into the ocean and screaming in the water and looking in the mirror and working the steps around my body. And I've had a lot of relationships that didn't serve me, and I've had sponsor, you know, my sponsor has seen me in fetal position so many times after breakups. And I was in this relationship. And I'm going to tread lightly, but I really loved this person. And we were talking about getting married and I thought she was the one, even though the people closest to my life were like, you know, it was clear that she wasn't my person, but I was so like ready to just get married because all my friends were doing it. And I was trying to force it. And we were moving forward. And I was saving up for the ring. And one day she said, David, it's over. And again, something which I now know is God just had me leave. And I remember I spent that night at a fellow's house, and I said a prayer and I called Nicole, who's I think on this meeting, and I told her what my prayer was. And I said, God, I'm so done with dating. If you want me to find the person, you have to make it so abundantly clear that there's no choice but for me to pursue her. Because I was surrendered. I was done. And the next day I called my sponsor in another program and I told him my girlfriend of, you know, many years had broken up with me. And he said, just come over to my house. And I was like, it's a weekday and it's LA. I don't want to drive in traffic. And he said, just be with my family. And I drove across the city. And as I was walking into my sponsor's front door, his cousin was walking through the back door from the guest house. And she had flown in the day before from Australia on a work visa to work for him. And that person became my wife. And my sponsor was the one who made it so abundantly clear a couple months later. Is like, David, why don't you take out Tori? And that, for me, was what I had asked for. And my dad gave the toast at my wedding. And my wedding was filled with love and fellows and support. And it felt like the feeling of a meeting, like it was amazing and beautiful and beyond anything that I ever could have imagined. And if you had told me that I was going to have my ex break up with me and then the next day meet a wife from the middle of nowhere in Australia, like so many things had to go right. And I could have went to the food over any of this, you know, like I had a sponsee, thank God, not thank God, it is God, who had the same thing happen. He was broken up with, and he went to the food, and I got to see what would happen if I went left instead of right. What would happen if I went to David, to self-will, to the disease, instead of a higher power and trust and surrender and acceptance. And I get that choice every single day. I can go left or right. I can go towards the program or against it. I can go into the center of the herd, or I can put my camera on or, you know, camera off and not look at people. So that she became my wife. And I don't know how much time I have, so I'm just going to keep talking. I'm just going to talk about the great events that will come to pass for you and countless others. It had taken me a long time. I moved out to LA, about 13 years ago to go to this graduate school program. And for years, it was like, when is it going to happen for me? When is it going to happen for me? And, it's now happening for me in a really big way. I've been on the biggest project of my life for the last 3 months. I've been living in hotels and cities across the country. And every morning when I can, when I have time, I'm going to a meeting, you know, in that city. And I was walking down the streets of New York City a couple of weeks ago, and I was on an OA meeting, body image meeting that I love. And I remember the thought that I used to have, when is it going to happen for me in my career? And the next thought was, you were never ready. Like, I had to build this firm bedrock of recovery and program. Because if you were to tell me in my first 3 years that I was going to live in a hotel for 3 months, with a little fridge and not my wife and, you know, in a foreign city, like I never would have stayed abstinent, but I've built the muscle today. Thanks to, you know, they say in AA, we wish you a slow briety. And for me, having abstinence come on God's time, having everything in my life come on God's time, it's allowed me to appreciate it when it's finally arrived, whether that's my work, my wife, my abstinence. It all comes in perfect timing. Like, I know that without a doubt today. And, you know, I want to talk about my mom for a little, my relationship with my mom. When I came into LA, I thought it was just my dad. And then as I became more and more awakened and conscious, I realized how much pain I had towards my mom for not protecting us and just for being so checked out and for always telling me I was crazy. And, you know, I said I was raised by another family. My mom picked up and moved to India and lived on an ashram. Like, she was just so on another planet. And she didn't, I didn't invite her to my wedding, which was a big thing at the time. Like, so much prayer and meditation with my wife, with my sponsor, and it just didn't feel right to have my mom there. And I had to get right with that decision. And a couple of years had gone by, and since my wedding, and I hadn't spoken to my mom. It's just one of those relationships. I guess it's the final frontier for me. There was always something that was like, one day, my mom is going to wake up and realize how much pain she caused me and apologize. And once she apologizes, then I'll forgive her. You know, it's the issues in my tissue. Like, I can't stop saying it. Like, this stuff runs deep. And what happened was my mom, and she's 77. She's not going to wake up one day and turn into a different person. But my mom got COVID and got it really bad and ended up in a psych ward and getting electric shock therapy. And she went into psychosis for 3 months. And I later learned she was like sexually abused in the psych ward, like very, very messy. But what happened for me in those 3 months was, and you know, I had called Susan, I had called fellows. The amazing thing about program is like you just, everybody has gone through something that you're going through. Like all I have to do is pick up the phone and ask for help and ask for someone to walk through it with me. And it may not be my sponsor. It may not be my best friend. It may be someone who I just know went through it. And in those 3 months that my mom was in psychosis, I dropped my story that one day she's going to be the mom that I want. And I realized this is what I get. Like there's a gift in this too. Like I had the mom that I had for a reason and she may never come back. And, you know, thank God she's slowly getting better. And I've been in New York twice in the last 2 months and I got to see her and I get to show up for her. And I learned in this program that hopefully it's a parent's job to teach a child how to live, but it's a child's job to teach a parent how to die. And because of this program and because of so many people in this program who I've heard walk their parents, as they pass, I get to show up with grace today for my mom. And I don't expect anything. It's about me. You know, I remember this person used to call me all the time, like 100 times a day, it felt like, in OA. And I used to tell my sponsor, you know, why is this person calling me all the time? Like, I don't have bandwidth. And my sponsor used to say, David, those calls are for you. Like those calls are for you to get out of you. And that's what this program is all about. It's like this weird inverse thing. I think I'm giving away my time and my energy and my love. But the more that I do that, the more it's just filled and the more that the universe provides. And that's how this program works for me. And, you know, I just, before this meeting started, I just wanted to write. Like I said, when I started this meeting, my story hasn't changed, but the person who's now telling it definitely has. And when I came in here, I was a victim. I had 15 years of eating disorder. And I know now today that what that gave me was a life of freedom and service and understanding. 15 years of hating my dad and not talking to him. I now know what, you know, true love and forgiveness means. Waiting so long for my career to take off, I now appreciate, you know, what I have now that I have it.
David, you have 5 more minutes.
Thank you so much. My ex breaking up with me when we were supposed to get married. The next day, I met my wife, and now I know without a doubt that I'm with my perfect partner. My mom ending up in a psych ward has allowed me to finally drop my story that one day I'm going to get the mom that I want. And, you know, it says, the Abraham Lincoln quote, which is in our daily readers, that nothing is good or bad. It's my thinking that makes it so. And I look at the worst things that were happening to me while they were happening. And once I've got through them, these were the biggest blessings in my life. Like, thank God that I don't know anything. Like, thank God for these 12 steps. Thank God for these principles. Thank God for grace. Thank God for problems, because they're really miracles waiting to happen. And, you know, the reason I chose the title of this meeting, I'm not here to not have a good life. Like, I come to OA, they say this disease is progressive, but so is recovery. And my life is amazing today. I'm in a healthy marriage. I have a great career. I sponsor a lot of people. I'm in a healthy body weight. I have a lot of money in the bank. I have great friendships. People count on me. I count on people. Most of my disordered relationships have been healed. My sexual trauma has been shined a light on. Like, I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. And, you know, it says in A Vision for You, let me just pull it up. You know, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. This is a fact. Like, if I work these 12 steps, if I do the deal, if I stay in the center of the herd, if I give and give and give without expecting anything in return, if I let my relationships be what they are without expecting people to be different, and if I truly know that acceptance is the answer to all my problems, great events will come to pass. And because I know that so deeply in my life, I have such a desire to serve in this program. And like my sponsor used to say, it's for me. Like, the more that I serve, the more that I'm served. So thank you so much for being here, for truly being here. Like, sometimes just being a box on a Zoom is enough. So I want everybody to hear that. And I love you all. And thank you so much.
That was just amazing. I'm so pumped. Okay. So thank you so much, David, for sharing that with us. It is now time to close this session. After the raffle, there will be entertainment with live musical performances and a comedian from 6:45 to 8:30 p.m. And we are running a little bit early, so...
There was a request made, David, if you're willing to share your contact information, if you would, if you could put that in chat. If not, that's fine, too.
Sure.
Thank you, Richard.